Hour number three on this Wednesday afternoon here on 102.5 The Game. The gang is all here for a segment. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. But Willie's going to head out after this segment. Head over to the airport. Predators taking off for the desert. Be taking on the Coyotes tomorrow night. 9 o'clock puck drop, 8 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. And an Arizona team, hard to believe, but right now playing some really good hockey. Beat Los Angeles last night in a shootout.
11-3-2 since February the 8th. The Coyotes. Now, a lot of those are Vancouver, Edmonton, some teams in the Pacific that aren't going anywhere, but still.
Doesn't matter. Looked like they were going to be the worst team in the league.
They've picked off some teams that are going to the playoffs. They're playing much better.
No doubt about it. All right, let's bring in our man, Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. The news really picked up yesterday afternoon here in Nashville. We're kind of wondering, okay, when are the Titans going to dip their toe in the free agency pool, which we know right now is supposed to be closed, but evidently people are jumping over the fence and they're swimming anyway, because the news, I guess they don't officially open up the gates till this afternoon. But when you hear Deion Lewis, when you hear Malcolm Butler, some big deals for those guys, and they're coming to Nashville to play for the Titans, what did you think?
Well, I mean, I think my initial reaction was, you know, kind of makes sense. You just look at the New England ties. I mean, I think it's been pretty clear, you know, between, you know, John Robinson, and then obviously, you know, when you think of Vrabel and you think, you know, Dean Pease, and you think about, you know, Logan Ryan that last year, and then you start to add, you know, Josh Klein, who, you know, they picked up off the street and is, you know, and then they're going to resign, obviously. You know, I think what they've done is tried to identify guys that have been productive in this league and productive, you know, in a system and a program that is probably something that they're going to try to emulate. And so, you know, I think it makes sense in terms of, you know, just personnel-wise and what you're trying to do. And then I think, you know, the other aspect of it is that, you know, you obviously have to pay attention to is, okay, well, you know, what's the compensation? Because, you know, are these going to be guys in a couple of years that, you know, you're cutting good players just because, you know, they're good, they're not playing to the level of, you know, the contract that you signed them to, which, you know, obviously we're seeing around the league right now. So, look, you know, Malcolm Butler is still a fairly young guy. You know, Deion Lewis's injury history you would hope would be behind him, because when he's healthy, obviously he's very good. But, you know, you just look at the money as well, and you have to figure if he's making that type of money, he's more than just a change of pace back.
One of your colleagues, Field Yates, tweeted out today that he put out the final offer the Patriots gave Malcolm Butler last year. I don't know if you've seen this or not.
Mm-mm.
So it looks like the Titans are reported to be giving Malcolm Butler 5 years, $61 million, $30 million guaranteed. Care to guess what the Patriots' final offer was, according to Field Yates, last year at this time?
Let's say it's the same money.
Close, yeah. 6 years, $66 million, 25 and a half guaranteed. So a little bit more.
Yeah,
guaranteed.
I mean, here's what I say, man. This is in no way meant to, you know, undercut anything that Field. I'm going to put it this way. I work closely with Field, and I don't have any doubt that someone in New England has given him that information, and he would have no reason to believe that it isn't true based on that type of thing. But I will say this. I think one of the maybe under-realized things, you know, in New England is this organization that gets portrayed as not speaking to the media and being so tight-lipped. You know, they run more, you know, backdoor PR than anybody in the league, in my opinion. And it's no different than Malcolm Butler, you know, next thing you know, just getting absolutely trashed after the Super Bowl, you know, by, you know, various insiders, come to find out that it really was just a coach's decision not to play Malcolm Butler. So, you know, I think New England does a really, really good job of after the fact, you know, PR spin around the league. And for whatever reason, you know, people generally don't, you know, expose them for it.
Jeff Fisher was very good at backdoor media. Very, very good at that. Sending messages from the back channels, for sure. So the question I have for you, Tim, and I posed this earlier in the show, it seems like it never catches up to them, ever. They take losses and hits every offseason. Is this the year? Now you talk about Danny Amendola. Nate Solder signs a big deal with the Giants. The two guys that have come here. There's some key guys now gone from New England. Does this finally catch up to them?
Well, look, I still think they're a good team. I mean, Brady's getting older, and the reality is when he starts, his play starts to decline, or he's dealing with injuries or whatever it may be, then the team's going to decline. And, you know, we can, you know, blame it on the part of players and things of that nature, but ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, when Brady starts to, you know, fall apart. But make no mistake about it. Like, Nate Solder, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, Brady gets so much credit, but, like, Nate Solder, you know, has just become the highest-paid offensive lineman for a reason. You know, you look at the production of Deion Lewis and, you know, even Rex Burkhead, for that matter, you know, see what happens with him. You know, Amendola, in terms of, you know, what he's able to do with, you know, when Edelman was out. You know, Edelman's coming off the ACL. So, you know, Gronk, you know, I guess, you know, Gronk has made some comments about, you know, Amendola being free and happy. And, you know, the truth is that New England does wear on some guys. And, you know, it isn't for everybody. And, you know, I think that some guys that have won and reached the pinnacle, you know, realize that, you know, it doesn't have to feel like that, you know, at every organization. And, you know, I think that can end up being a factor as well.
Visiting with Tim Hasselbeck here, as we do each Wednesday. And, Tim, I look at the Titans, one of my biggest concerns going into this free agency period, the offseason, was the offensive line, because I thought it, frankly, woefully underperformed in the interior last year during the regular season when the running game was not up to par the way we thought it should be. Yet we find out that they've put out a restricted free agent tender on Quentin Spain, and they re-signed Josh Klein today. So what am I missing? Is this offensive line much better than I thought it was last year?
Yeah, you know, I think I think around the league that you know, the starting five for the Titans is definitely viewed as a good offensive line. I think that, you know, I just remember last year and some of the struggles that they had running the football. I mean, truth be told, you know, there's so many factors that weigh into, you know, how you're running the ball, you know, beyond just the offensive line. And I think that, you know, much like sacks, you know, are not just indicative of how the offensive line is playing. And so I think when you look at last year and some of the things that they were doing offensively of, hey, listen, we're going to call and run this run. This is, you know, remember the whole exotic smash mouth football. Well, like, when you do that, when you're just so committed to, hey, we're running it no matter what happens is you run against bad looks and bad angles, and it makes the job more difficult, you know, for, you know, the guys up front. It can especially make it more difficult for the guys inside because, you know, if you've got to reach block somebody, well, now instead of having a good angle to reach block him, you know, you almost have an impossible block because of the way the front is shifted. So, you know, not trying to get, you know, uber technical or anything like that, but, you know, I think when you look at, like, take New England, for example. New England, you know, in terms of their interior, you know, they really have a bunch of guys that are kind of just off the street guys that have played over time inside, with the few exceptions of like a Logan Mankins or somebody like that. And really the reason that they were able to successfully run the football is there's so much on the quarterback to get you into a good run look. And so, you know, you're always kind of running, you know, into advantageous looks, which, you know, really is as important in my opinion in the run game as nearly anything. So, you know, I think just league-wide perception, personnel-wise, I think people like the front, you know, offensively for the Titans.
It sounds like more and more that they're going to switch to more of a zone run-based scheme this year. Could that be beneficial for a guy like Josh Klein?
Yeah, and so that's basically what I'm saying. So I, you know, I'll give you a quick example of the Colts would do it when they were in their zone run game with Peyton Manning. They would call, 36 zone. Well, if they got up there and 36 zone wasn't great because of, the shade on the guard, then Peyton would even adjust it to 34 zone just to, make it a more inside run that's most likely going to wind back just based on the front. Now, the number count maybe was good, but then that way, at least like you were setting up the guard in the center for a better double team to the linebacker level players. And so, when you have a zone run team, if you just think about, what the Titans may do, you can run your typical zone. So stretch zone plays, inside zone plays, you can do all of that. You can run the zone wind back plays. But then you also have the ability to, run the zone escort runs that they ran with, Marcus, and they would have Delaney Walker coming through that were read-type plays, or just the traditional read plays. So I don't think there's any question that, a zone run scheme is probably a better fit to marry so many of the different things that you can probably do with Marcus. And then you also have, everything that you would want to do in the passing game off of it. So, I think the question ends up being, and I would think that both tackles, end up being fine with it. I don't think it's as much of a change for them. Those guys like to, those guys want to kind of maul and just be physical, and that power game, made sense for both tackles. And I think that it might be somewhat of an adjustment for them.
We obviously saw the 1-2 punch of DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. When Murray was out, a lot of people wondered what the new 1-2 punch would look like. We know Deion Lewis comes in. What is that in your mind, Tim? Because at first glance, I look at it, I'm thinking Henry's the one and Lewis is the change of pace back there. But when you look at Lewis's numbers pretty close end of last year, he led the league in yards from scrimmage in the second half of the season. It was like 4.8 yards per carry. How do you see the balance of carries working out between those two guys?
Well, I think it's going to be hard let me put it this way. I think based on touches, I think Deion Lewis is going to touch the football more than DeMarco Murray, than Derrick Henry will. Just because I think that they will manufacture touches in the passing game that are extensions of the run game. I don't have the number in front of me, but there was also people kind of, mentioning Lewis's production in between the tackles a year ago. I think sometimes guys get viewed as, because they're maybe diminutive in stature, that they're not inside the tackle runners. And I think that, when you just, again, part of it is the scheme. If you look at New England, New England doesn't play with a fullback very often. A lot of their in between the tackle runs, or out of the shotgun, against a five-man box, or a six-man box. So, I think that we could see a lot of that for Lewis. Now, there's no question that Henry's going to be the short yardage and goal line back. And I think really what this probably is indicative of is that, teams know they need to run the football or be able to run the football, but more important than being able to say, hey, we can run the football, you need to be able to situationally run it. And having backs that can do, different things is helpful to you. And so situationally, you need to be able to convert on third and fourth and one. You need to be able to convert on goal to go, situations. You need to be able to get off of your, when you're backed up, get off the end zone line. You need to be able to get one first down in a four-minute situation. And so I think if you just look at the two backs, the different things that they're good at, I think it's probably setting the Titans up to be able to situationally run the football better.
Tim, your thoughts on the quarterback shuffle here, as it looks like it's going to go down. Let's start at the top with Cousins heading to Minnesota, and then we'll get to the dominoes after that.
Well, I think Cousins ended up in probably the best spot possible for him. I forget what I said when I was talking to you guys last week. I was guessing about where those guys were going to go. But it's the perfect spot for Cousins because, there's going to be a somewhat similar offense that, you know, he was familiar with, you know, basic West Coast principles. You've got a good running backs. You've got an offensive line that was severely upgraded a year ago. You've got two outstanding wide receivers, two complementary receivers that are pretty good, a really, really good tight end, an excellent defense. I think Kirk Cousins has found himself in the best spot possible. And then when you think about, I think he's going to be a free agent at 32 years old. I mean, Kirk Cousins, you know, when you look up, is going to probably have played this thing absolutely perfectly. So that's what I would say there. That obviously moves Keenum. You know, things kind of make sense with Keenum in Denver based on, you know, just some of the people that have been around Keenum before, and the fact that he's probably the next best option for Denver with kind of the age of that team and their desire to try to win, you know, based on the production that he had a year ago. The Bradford Bunny, like a lot of people, I mean, it surprises me because I don't know that he can stay healthy. That's somewhat shocking to me. I think I said to you guys last week that I use Teddy Bridgewater as a backup type money. I think I used the Nick Foles comparison money. 1 year's $10 million is probably a little bit better than backup money. But that's how I view him. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing pans out.
So with all of this trickle down, you still have the Titans that need a backup quarterback. As you just pointed out, the bar is set high. The money is pretty expensive. You almost have to overpay to even get a backup at this point. So what's left there?
Yeah, I don't know that you have to overpay, though, because, the shuffle hasn't completely happened yet, right? And there's going to be guys that get, you know, that end up getting drafted that are going to close up spots. But, you know, so there's going to be quarterbacks that could be drafted that could potentially be your backup. It's probably not the ideal situation for the Titans with Marcus's injury history. But, you know, Trevor Siemian's on the block, and Geno Smith is out there. And, you know, if A.J. McCarron does end up in New England for whatever reason, then Brian Hoyer ends up becoming available. And, you know, there's going to end up being movement. There's going to end up, you know, guys that, you know, that end up getting cut. I mean, the Giants are going to end up, you know, most likely having to move on from guys. The Jets are definitely going to move on from guys. So, you know, I don't know that you have to overpay like some teams do. But look, the risk in overpaying is that you don't get somebody that maybe, you know, you were kind of anticipating, you know, getting. And then you maybe find yourself in a situation. Let's say Geno Smith is ends up being the answer. You know, then you have Geno Smith as your backup. Like, could Geno Smith help you win two games? Maybe, but he's probably less likely to help you win two games than, let's use Teddy Bridgewater. Maybe Teddy Bridgewater, you know, or a Matt Moore type or somebody like that.
The Bears have been active. The Browns have been active. But I'm going to ask you on the other side, was it good money spent? We'll do that on the other side. More with Tim Hasselbeck. He joins us every Wednesday at noon, and he's brought to you by Penn Station East Coast Subs, locations in Hermitage, Mount Juliet, Bellevue, and two locations down in Murfreesboro. More NFL talk. It's official here in a couple of hours. More with Tim Hasselbeck next on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN. Tim, do you fill out a bracket? Do you care about March Madness?
Oh, yeah, of course I thought about bracket. Family bracket. You'll have to do one, though. And, you know, I know it's been talked about probably a bunch of places, but just one. Darren, you seem like the kind of guy that's got like 30.
No.
And then, like, celebrate. It's like crazy when you win the pool, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute, dude. It's like, what's up?
So I seem like that guy? You don't think I have integrity?
Mm-hmm. You seem like that guy.
Bracket integrity?
Mm-hmm.
You may or may not be right. I'm not willing to give you that answer.
That's what I mean. You know what I mean? Like you got like a Smyrna Braves one, like you taunt a bunch of, you know, 10-year-olds. When you win, and it's like, yeah, but dude, like you came in last in the 102.5 the game won, so you can, which is a totally different bracket, you know. Like, I'm on to you.
I've never told a 5- and 6-year-old in your face, ever. By the way, sorry about Boston College. They lost to Western Kentucky last night, so sorry about that.
Did they?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that women's hoops?
That would be the NIT. Clearly, you were paying close attention. Yeah.
By the way, I'm just going. I have Purdue winning it all. Just so you
Purdue,
know.
Purdue, okay. All right. Steve said.
Wait
he
a second. Okay, if you're not the guy with a bunch of different brackets, you're the guy that picks the highest seed all the way through.
No, I'm going to pick a lot of upsets, but I'm going to have Villanova winning it all. But I've got a ton of upsets.
Okay.
Steve's got Michigan State. Willie has been over here. I don't like my picks. I don't like the flow of my bracket.
I got Duke. I don't like Duke. I cannot stand Duke, but I'm picking Duke.
He hates his bracket, but it's done.
I hate my bracket. It's done. I got to go with it.
Willie should be the basketball expert, too, shouldn't he?
Well, he's our bracketologist on the show.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I tell you who's going to be in the tournament. I don't know if I'm that great at picking.
Don't ask him about Nevada, though.
Yeah, that was really? My blind spot. Who's here?
So, Willie, you're not going to get to go. You're taking off today. You're not going to get to go. We talked about this
exactly.
A while ago, huh?
I'll be in the lovely city of Buffalo while the tournament's going on.
In March.
And I'll be in Denver.
I thought that you would have just kind of hopped on a little private plane, zip back for one session or something.
Maybe Herb Street. Could you get me in touch with Herb Street? He's always at the airport when we're there. He's zipping off somewhere like on a Friday afternoon off to his next spot. Maybe I need to get with his people.
Yeah, I thought that you had that deal. I guess it's just Dan.
That's right. By the way, Memphis has told Tubby Smith thanks for the 2 years, but we're moving on from Tubby Smith. And all signs are pointing toward Penny Hardaway probably as maybe the successor to Tubby Smith.
Good luck to them on that.
Ooh, yeah. That would be interesting.
Maybe Larry Brown on his staff.
He is a legend.
By the way, they brought in Tubby Smith to clean up the program. If they then get rid of him and hire Penny and Larry Brown.
You don't think that's going to be clean?
I don't know what they're doing is all I'm saying.
They want to win, Steve. That's really the message. So the Bears, I guess, are trying to win. The Browns are trying to win, I guess. The Bears have loaded up on offense to help out their young quarterback. They just signed Taylor Gabriel, or at least that's the reports, a 4-year deal that he's going there. They get Trey Burton. They got Allen Robinson. The Browns had tons of money to spend. They've been very active. They've been trading and signing. But the question is, have they been spending it wisely? Are their moves been good moves, in your opinion?
It made their teams better, both of them, I believe. Look, the Browns, to start off, because I think it's the biggest one, they have a starting quarterback now. You know, I think I've said to you guys a number of different times, I think Tyrod Taylor, you're going to rank. You're going to say, okay, there's 32, you know, who are the 32 of the best quarterbacks on the planet right now. Tyrod Taylor's one of them. It's just, he is. And so they can win games with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. Now, I'm not saying they're going to the postseason or anything like that, but were they 1-31 or something, you know, over the last two seasons? Mm-hmm. They now have a quarterback that can help them win games. That's a big deal, in my opinion. And I think when you do that, you know, picking up some capital for Deshaun Kizer, you know, also is a move that ends up making sense. So, you know, Jarvis Landry's got a massive amount of, you know, production in the league the past few years. And he's certainly going to help Tyrod. So I have no issues whatsoever with anything the Browns have done. You know, in terms of the Bears, you know, probably not on with you guys, but, you know, on, Tom Waddle's radio show in Chicago, you know, I've talked to those guys a fair amount, and I thought that last year the Bears had the worst, you know, receiving core in the NFL. And I think it was one of the things that was that made it hard to evaluate how Mitchell Trubisky, you know, played in year one, because his best weapon was Tariq Cohen. And, you know, there was only so many things you could do with this kind of
change of pace back that they had that, you know, wasn't even on the field all that much because, you know, they're also using, you know, Jordan Howard quite a bit. And then, you know, Cameron Meredith gets hurt and receiving core gets even worse. And then Zach Miller goes down with a brutal injury and they didn't even have a tight end. So I think Trey Burton and getting a number one wide receiver, getting some speed to kind of diversify your receiving group, I don't have an issue with them trying to improve and get better at the position.
The best signing, in your opinion, and the worst signing was what?
You know, the best signing for me, ends up, yeah, I guess I'll go back to the quarterbacks. It would be Cousins. Look, if you weren't going to keep Keenum, then you needed to improve at the position, and I believe they did that with Cousins. And, look, that's a team that, well, the NFC North's tough, but I could easily see them in the postseason a year from now. You know, the worst one for me would be, you know, Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford's going to make $20 million this year from the Cardinals.
How much money has he made in his career?
I looked this up yesterday. It's $114 million.
That is insane. And how many games has he won?
That I didn't look up.
$114 million? Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I've been around a lot of guys that, you know, have you know, either been teammates of Sam's and or coached him. And I will tell you this, that there really isn't anybody that doesn't like him or doesn't think that he can be really good. You know, he's got a – I mean, look, you get drafted number one overall if you've got kind of really unique talent. I mean, he's big, he's athletic, he throws a really good ball, he's got – more than enough arm strength. He's very accurate, extremely smart. I mean, there's a lot to like about Sam. And look, here's the other thing. I mean, he's got a ton of experience too. You know, the challenge ends up being is that he misses a lot of games. I mean, I'm looking at the, you know, his career here. One, two. He's had three seasons where he's played 16 games. Three. That's it. You know, in 9 years, that's not a good track record at all. But look, he's thrown over 100 touchdowns and 57 interceptions. Like, that's not a terrible ratio. I mean, that's, you know, I don't want to speak out of two sides of my mouth and say, you know, hey, Tyrod Taylor's, you know, a starter and Sam Bradford's not. I mean, the question ends up being like, do you want Sam Bradford or do you want, you know, Tom Savage or Blaine Gabbert or Mike Glennon, you know, who looks like he's going to join them there. So, you know, I understand why you do it. I just, like, for me, I can't imagine that that's the kind of money that he's commanding elsewhere. You know, I mean, you think about the hardball that was played with Josh McCown or the hardball that was played a few years ago by the Jets with Ryan Fitzpatrick because they were like, you know what, we like him and he's probably our best option, but there's, like, find me the other team paying him $20 million this year. So, like I would ask you guys, who else was paying Sam Bradford $20 million this year?
I don't know how you find it. By the way, I looked it up. It's 34-45-1 is the record. So 114 million for 30. That's about 3 million and change per win. Oof. In the National Football League. Speaking of contracts, I'm with you, Tim. That I think Kirk Cousins landed in a great spot, and I think probably the Vikings are the winner of the free agency quarterback battle at this point by getting Cousins. But I have questions about a fully guaranteed contract for $84 million. How much pressure does that put on Cousins and the Vikings in this deal that he's got to be great?
I actually think that takes a lot of pressure off of Cousins. Like, it's done. You know, there's no, hey, you didn't play well, they're going to come back to you and try to renegotiate it. Like, well, that's the deal. This is what we owe you, and you give us 3 years. I mean, I actually think that it cleans it up for him. People are going to expect him to play like a starter. I think that, you know, the challenge that he's going to have is that he's following Case Keenum, who was dirt cheap, who, you know, at moments kind of played at an MVP level a year ago. I mean, I think that's, you know, probably where there's some pressure that comes in. But here's what's going to happen. Aaron Rodgers is going to do his deal. So no one's going to be talking about Kirk Cousins as being the highest paid quarterback in the league. And the reality is it's just what quarterbacks are getting paid. You know, whether Nate Solder is making 15 and a half, you know, a year to play left tackle. So, you know, quarterback is going to be more than that. I mean, that's just, you know, that's how it works out. So I think, you know, as we, you know, through the life of the deal, I don't think that people are going to look at it and be like, oh my gosh, you know, look at this Kirk Cousins thing. He's not upholding his end of the bargain. I mean, he's going to, you know, eventually, you know, he's going to be paid like a top 10 quarterback. And I believe that he can play like a top 10 quarterback, especially with the talent around him. I think what would have been harder is if he got that same deal at the Jets and they're asking him to come in and be the savior there. And the team's just not nearly as good.
Yeah.
When you said Sam, I thought you were going to say Sammy Watkins. I was stunned at what the Chiefs gave him. Were you?
Yeah, you know, I saw somebody kind of make a comment, and Sam Bradford certainly bears this out as well. There's still something that happens in today's NFL where how you came into the league really matters. I mean, you look at Sammy Watkins' production and injury history, and it doesn't make sense. And so I think that ends up being the, you know, that I think, you know, people still think, well, listen, if the foot stuff is behind him, then he can do this. And look, the Chiefs have gotten it wrong before, that's for sure. You know, they paid Dwayne Bowe, you know, I think $9 million 1 year to play about 9 snaps. So, yeah, I didn't like that one either. The thing for me is, though, is that there could have been somebody else out there that felt similarly about Sammy Watkins. You know, it wouldn't have been me, but there could have been somebody else out there that felt that way. I still am trying to figure out where Sam Bradford's other landing spot was.
Tim, the new legal tampering period takes away a lot of the flurry of 3 o'clock this afternoon when free agency actually opens up. You don't get quite the barrage that we used to get before that happened. But what's the biggest question, I guess, maybe that we don't know in your mind heading into the actual open of free agency or the dominoes that we haven't seen fall yet?
You know what? Kind of like a question just based on the fact that it seems like all the big, right? Like the Albert Haynesworth thing, like signing, like that kind of, those things are trickled. All those things have trickled in. You know, I guess, I don't know. I mean,
is there a team that sat back maybe that hasn't done anything in your mind that you're just sort of waiting and thinking, what are they doing right now?
Well, there's definitely been some surprises for me, like hearing Drew Brees in his comments about Jimmy Graham, some of the interest, and then to have that not happen right away, and then obviously the Green Bay situation for Jimmy Graham. Like, that surprised me quite a bit, especially when you look at Drew Brees' numbers. I mean, Drew Brees basically, you know, probably took a bit of a discount, and then they don't get – you know, then they don't get Jimmy Graham. You know, what's going to happen with Rob Gronkowski, I think, is interesting. Amendola going to Miami so quickly is interesting. You know, the Richard Sherman's deal. I mean, a lot of the things, kind of as you said, a lot of these things, because they, you know, really what happens is this legal tampering period, really all it does is it lets these, you know, insiders tell everybody what the agent and teams are telling them, rather than being like, hey, listen, you can't say anything yet or else we're going to get in trouble for doing the deal too early. So I think that, you know, that's kind of, you know, that stuff, I guess, you know, and just looking at the different approach that Green Bay has had, considering, you know, what's happened, you know, what's been their MO in the past. And I will say this, you know, I always feel like, it's the it's the free agents that like nobody talks about, right? It's like all these big name guys and the guys that sign right away. We talk about them a lot, but usually it's the guy that signs like the 1 year, you know, base plus some incentive deal. He was a good player, but he was old, or he's coming off an injury or whatever it may be. And he goes somewhere and he ends up being really productive. You know, I mean, you think about like Chris Long a few years ago, kind of was that a little bit for New England. He was productive and no one talked about it when he signed. Like, what about Jordy Nelson? You know, like Jordy Nelson could end up going somewhere and really helping somebody. And, you know, I think, you know, Adam Schefter had to put out there probably through Jordy's representatives that like, hey, he's not done playing football. So, yeah, it's those guys that really intrigue me, and I feel like I like paying attention to.
Tyrann Mathieu is going to be cut by the Cardinals. From everything I've seen out there, speculation is watch for the Giants to be a heavy player with him.
Hmm.
How about that?
Yeah, and it's a great example of a guy, you know, some injury history, still fairly young, but he's making a ton of money. New regime, and I think that, you know, because he's got a unique skill set, he's kind of a safety, he's got some corner skills, but he obviously plays the ball well. You know, finding the right fit for him, you know, ends up being key also.
All right, let's wrap it up with some news. Let's make some news on the show, Tim. So McDonough's out.
You want to do that?
Gruden's out. Who's in the booth next year for Monday Night Football? Let's break it. Come on. You?
Me and Willie.
Willie?
All right.
Willie's wow. Willie can only do it till October.
I have to clear some Mondays off the schedule here.
You can do a September schedule.
You know, I honestly don't know. That was really surprising to me. You know, I think Sean McDonough's done a good job. I think with all of these jobs, especially the marquee jobs, there's just is always so much negativity surrounding them, you know, just, and maybe because it's kind of like the whole idea of like, hey, well, you know, when you're on the top, everyone wants to take a shot at you. I mean, you know, I think if you pulled most people, they would say Troy Aikman does a great job. And that most people would say that John Gruden did a great job. And they would say that Chris Collinsworth was excellent. And Romo's gotten great reviews and all of that stuff. But it seems like, it, you know, it's, you can, you know, you, there's a very loud, you know, section of people that, you know, will tell you everything that Chris Collinsworth says that, you know, doesn't make sense, or that Aikman says that was blatantly obvious, or whatever. You know, I think it's one of those deals. And so, like, for me, I thought Sean McDonough and John Gruden did an excellent job. And so whoever ends up, you know, taking their place, I think ends up having really, you know, big shoes to fill. Because, look, we haven't traditionally gotten the best games. And when that's the case, you need to have a really good team, and you have to have really good chemistry. So I don't know. I do know that there are a lot of talented people inside the company, and I'm sure that they're considering those people as well as, you know, a lot of people outside of it.
Good answer. I just don't think we made any news with that answer, so thanks.
You don't want to make news? What do you want me to do? Like, okay. I saw the Joe Tessitore thing. I mean, look, Boston College guy,
well,
Joe Tess.
How about next week, will you tell us if you're going to do another college game? Like you did this year. Can you tell us?
Ooh, I mean, yeah, I would. Here's
Save
the
it.
Problem is when I break news to you guys, you don't believe me.
Hey, that's break some problem. News. That's okay.
That's very,
you know what I mean?
That's
so
true.
So it's like I feel like I just feel like a lot's been happening. You know what I mean? Chase Lee, Jay, Willie's about to hop off and get on a plane. Darren, you were out for a little bit. Like, I'm just getting to know Steve. Like, I kind of feel like Tom Brady must feel like right now.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, all these people around him leaving.
You know what, though? You like him, have a strong right arm, and you're carrying all of us.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, see, now see, we get to know each other better. Because one thing for sure is I never had a strong arm.
Always a pleasure. Have a great rest of your week. We'll do it again next week.
All right. See you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you every Wednesday by Penn Station East Coast Subs and Hermitage, Mount Juliet, Bellevue, and two locations down in the borough. Willie's heading to the airport. Predators and Coyotes tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, pregame at 8. We'll come back and wrap up the third hour next. We're looking forward to tomorrow. We'll be at Lexus Lounge, Bridgestone Arena. It's our tournament watch party. Did this last year. The Predators did an unbelievable job. We broadcast live there, and you turned out. So 102.5 The Game will be there all day broadcasting live. All the shows start with Morning Drive and end with Jared and the GM. You can be a part of it. The setup is unbelievable. There's not a bad seat in the house. There's unlimited draft beer, house wine, soft drinks, unlimited buffet with sandwiches, pizza, wings, a lot more. The teams will be practicing on the floor at Bridgestone Arena for the Friday session. Jack Daniels will be there for some sampling. To purchase tickets, call 615-770-7800 or visit NashvillePredators.com/watchparty18. Cincinnati will kick off our Friday session here. Cincinnati, Georgia State, 1 o'clock tip, and that game will be on TBS. That will be on Friday. But while we're on the air tomorrow, Steve, UT will be playing their game against Wright State.
Yeah, should be interesting. I think that is a matchup that favors Tennessee in a big way. I think the line is like 13, something like that. It is a big, even first-round line, but I think it shows that the matchup favors Tennessee. There's not a lot of belief in Wright State, and frankly, I think people finally, after picking them 13th in the non-conference, actually believe this Tennessee team's consistent enough to do a little damage in this tournament.
Thad Matta has turned down Georgia. Tubby Smith is out in Memphis.
Well, I must chime in real quick. Apparently getting phone calls. Apparently there's a major wreck on 440 headed towards 24 and 40. The split there, so you might want to avoid that if you're in your car.
It's funny that you said that, Julian, because I was looking at Steve going, did I just say I was giving away tickets? Because the phone lines were blowing up.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know. That's what I was thinking. Like, did he give away tickets? So why are people calling in? We just got here. We're not even talking about anything yet.
I don't have tickets.
Avoid 440.
Yeah, avoid 440, I guess, towards the 24-40 split heading towards the airport until, I guess, right here.
Good tip.
Yeah.
Good tip.
Which is nice for me to know, too.
Yeah, and if you're out there listening, yes, it is. If you're out there listening, keep us posted because we want to keep everybody, you know, look, traffic is bad enough in this town. And something like this happens, love to get the word out to tell people you might want to think about an alternative route. Okay, that news. Thad Matta, strange explanation on why he didn't take the Georgia job. I think if you read between the lines, it looked like he wasn't comfortable with that job. Didn't seem like, I don't know, he felt like he could win there at enough high enough clip, I guess.
I thought it was an interesting match in the first place. I like Thad Matta. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a good basketball coach, and what he did at Ohio State speaks for itself. I mean, getting to a national championship game, winning Big Ten titles, and all those sort of things. It was weird how it ended there. He had a lot of health problems last season. I think that played a big role of it. They weren't sure he could be as active as he needed to be on the recruiting trail. I'm not sure he felt he could be as active as he needed. So where is his health right now? How comfortable are you if you were Georgia? And I hate to say it, but I think to be really successful as the Georgia basketball coach, you've got to be able to get into Atlanta. And depending on who you talk to in basketball circles, they'll tell you how you do that exactly and whether
you better know the right people.
And how many gray areas you have to step in to perhaps play in that game. But what was interesting to me about the Thad Matta choice is he doesn't have any ties to that area at all. So you were just hiring a guy that you thought was a good coach that had a track record somewhere else to come in and try and do it. And you know who the last guy they tried to do that with? Was Mark Fox.
Yeah.
He didn't have any ties to that area either. He was really respected as a basketball coach. But we saw what happened there ultimately. The best players he got, like Yonte Mayton, he's from Michigan. He had no success recruiting the best players in the state of Georgia, and you don't have to recruit specifically the state of Georgia if you're the Georgia coach, but there's enough good players in the Atlanta area and in Georgia that, man, if you can keep some of those guys at home, you got a chance.
Yeah, that's what Josh Pastner is trying to figure out right now at G-Tech.
Yep.
Which he's not being very successful at. And that's what he's known for is recruiting. What he does during the course of a game,
he's the guy to get down and get after it in recruiting in the state of Georgia, but man, there's a lot going around him at the moment, dating back to Memphis, to off the court stuff, that It's just a difficult situation.
And it looks like all signs are pointing toward Penny Hardaway at Memphis. I mean, that's
who knows how
that rumor's been hot and heavy for a good week. I think when Tubby went on that little rant, it was probably he could feel the walls closing in, I would assume.
Yeah. And if you listen to people in Memphis, they basically say that Penny was the key to whoever got that job, whether it be Tubby Smith or someone else, when he wanted to recruit the Memphis area kids. Penny's kind of a guy you have to go through.
Yeah.
And apparently Penny just stopped helping him. And so it was pretty clear he was angling for that job at some point, and we'll see. I mean, Memphis is doing a complete, I guess, 360. I mean, they're back to where they were a couple years ago when they thought, all right, we're trying to clean up this program. We're trying to put it in a place where it's really respectable around the country. We're going to bring in a guy like Tubby Smith who's completely clean and people respect. And then they didn't like what they saw on the court for a couple years, and now they're going to Penny and maybe Larry Brown. Seems like they're backtracking.
In the end, we know what it's all about. Let's be honest. No matter how they window dress it, oh, we want this done. It's about really.
It's winning.
Zach in Franklin. Zach, what's up?
What's up, guys? So I just had a quick thought on something. I'm not really 100% sure how true reports are, but do you all know anything about the whole UConn situation and the possibility of them having asked Gino about coaching the men, swapping from women's to men? Because that's quite a storyline if the university actually asked him. But I know the reports that came out about it sounded like it may have been just, you know, somebody else out in the distance, maybe not attached to the university, asking him. But what do you guys know about that? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you, Zach. I think he's actually going to coach both. They're going to play doubleheaders. The women will play first, and then the men, and he could just stick around and coach both.
Well, it'll be like a high school Friday night. Women at 6, men's game at 8:30, then the next weekend they flip-flop.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Jeff Jacobs, who's a pretty big sports writer up there in Connecticut. I guess he had an article. Gino was asked about this, if he was interested, and he said, not my age of 63 right now, no. I come in, I get to do whatever I feel like doing, I do that. I've got to start all over like I'm 35 years old again. And kill myself, would I do it? I could do it. Would I enjoy doing it? I would enjoy it. Do I want to do it? No.
Huh. That's not happening.
No. It was always ridiculous to even ask him that in the first place. It's like, hey, man, do you want to leave the women's basketball program where you never lose and go coach the men's team?
Well, look, but
Pat Summitt went through the same stuff. I mean, we used to hear this stuff all the time. Hey, what about at Pat Summitt coaching the men? I mean, all the time. This is what happens. It's silly. He's not going to do it. But how would you feel if you were Gino if they really did come to him?
Here's the only question.
Because isn't that the school telling you, we think the men is more important, so we need you to coach them than what you're doing on the women's side? That would be a bad look, don't you think?
That's a good point for sure, if you would make that switch at the same school. I think the reason why asking the question isn't the craziest thing in the world is because we hear this all the time with Nick Saban too. You know, Nick Saban set himself up at Alabama where he's got this dominant thing going. He's sort of etching his name in stone now as one of the best, if not the best, college football coach of all time. But yet after every title, we seem to ask the question, does he want to go back to the NFL? Does he want the Colts job? I mean, that's the thing I think with Gino is even at 63, is he maybe bored? Is he thinking, I've won so many titles now, I'd like a crack at the WNBA or the men's game or whatever it might be for 5 or 6 more years just to see, just to prove it that I can coach there too? It sounds like not, but
if he wanted to do
I'd
it,
ask the question.
He could have done it. That's the way I look at it. Yeah. We'll come back. Fourth and final hour, we'll switch over to the hockey side. We'll bring in Robbie Stanley, NHL.com. That's next.